Blog Talk Radio.
And where else would you rather be? Los Angeles, California. Beautiful day here in Los Angeles, the West Coast. Russell and Rudge coming at you with another episode in the Super Bowl recap after a less than super Super Bowl yesterday. Seattle absolutely stomped Denver 43-8. Really one of the first blowout Super Bowls in over a decade. We've got a jam-packed show for you, Rudge. Joining us on the line, we're also going to talk with Chandler Simon, keeping it all in family. He had the honor and the privilege of attending the Super Bowl yesterday in North Jersey, and he's going to call in a moment and tell us a little bit about his experiences. But, Rudge, as I bring you in, Rudge, you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you, Russell. How you doing?
Really, the question obviously is how are you doing coming off the flu and all the illnesses that we had last week, but I think we're doing better, and I think a lot of the chicken wings at the Super Bowl party you had yesterday certainly helped you with that, am I right?
Yeah, they did. Chicken wings heal wounds. I've come to that conclusion.
No,
so I'm feeling great. I'm feeling fine.
And this was a Super Bowl that, I definitely had very high expectations coming in, and we've kind of found a trend on the Russell and Red Show where every prediction I make goes horribly wrong. I predicted Denver 31-28, and that is looking pretty bad in retrospect.
Yeah, Russell, you had some pretty bad luck with your picks this year in the postseason, and I was actually listening to our show as you were running it solo last week, and you were picking the Seahawks, and I had everything. You were picking the Broncos, and I had everything to say to disagree with you, but unfortunately I was too sick to even talk. So
looking back, we can talk now, that's for sure. We can definitely talk now. And, I was really surprised by this Super Bowl. I thought Denver coming in with the offensive weapons that they had with Welker, Demaryius Thomas, with the balance between run and pass, with the great quarterback play of Peyton Manning, a guy who broke the record for passing yards and touchdowns in a season, a guy who had a career year, I thought that Denver was going to be able to come in and really stretch the Seattle defense, and that just completely did not happen.
I think everyone was expecting a very tight game. Obviously, you had the number one offense versus the number one defense. I thought Seattle was going to come on top. I don't think anyone predicted such a big blowout. I mean, I would be shocked if anyone did, or if anyone had the guts to say that Seattle would win by nearly 40 points. It was definitely shocking. It was, quite honestly, a pretty boring game. I think the only people who actually enjoyed it were the Seattle fans themselves. It almost seemed like a game of Madden to me. Every time Seattle got the ball, it was either a touchdown and then, when they were on defense, you could expect an interception or some crazy, kickoff return or something like that. So it was definitely shocking.
And the thing that really stood out to me is, from literally the first play, literally play one, when Peyton Manning comes on the field, they just were not ready to go, and they were not executing at all the way that we have been accustomed to seeing Denver execute throughout the year. This was a team that turned the ball over and had not even turned the ball over, but every turnover that they had was an absolutely brutal, brutal turnover, beginning on the first play of the game, 14:48 to go in the first quarter, and Sean Moreno recovers the fumble after a complete miscue. And before we go any further, I think we've got to talk about play one, because I really think that play set a tone to the way that the game was going to go. Everyone has nerves in the Super Bowl, Rudge. Everyone is nervous. You're coming out. It's a huge new experience. And Denver, on play one, you get Manning in the shotgun, and unbelievably, they are having issues because the 12th man is making too much noise and they couldn't get the play and they couldn't call the audible. They totally screw up the play. The center snaps it before Manning's ready, and it goes into the end zone. And that is a play that just cannot happen. You have 2 weeks to prepare for this game. You know that the 12th man is going to be there, and it's going to be loud. And the fact that they were not ready for that was really just shocking to me.
You can't let that happen. You're absolutely right. You have 2 weeks to prepare for the Super Bowl. You're in the Super Bowl, and you can't make a mistake like a Pop Warner team would do on the very first play of the game. Now, I was shocked, though, that they didn't come back from that. You know, I was thinking at that point, yeah, sure, maybe it set the tone a little bit, gave Seattle a little bit of momentum, but ultimately, that's 2 points. You know, as Peyton Manning, I'm thinking on the sidelines, all right, that's 2 points. I still have a chance to get my team down the field and get a lead, even with a field goal. So, you know, my trust in Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos offense was good enough that I expected them to bounce back from that safety as if it were really nothing. So, you know, I was more surprised by the fact that they didn't answer.
And there was no bounce back, and it really only got worse from there after safety. Manning threw the first of a couple of the interceptions that he had early on a bad throw, and I want to talk about Peyton real quick, Rudge, because this was a guy coming in off of the best year for a quarterback probably ever. Let's just give him that. He was borderline the unanimous MVP. There was only one lunatic who voted for Tom Brady. And he came in to the Super Bowl and had an appalling performance. I mean, there was nothing that he did well. There's no takeaways other than the one touchdown he had at the very end of the third quarter. Nothing he did well. And across the field, you have a guy like Russell Wilson, who coming into this game certainly showed flashes against San Francisco, but this was a guy who really struggled down the stretch, had a brutal game against New Orleans where they barely escaped, and he was the guy who looked like the NFL MVP. How many third down throws did he make that were right on the money? How many big plays did Wilson make yesterday? And Peyton Manning just could not respond and really couldn't do anything, and I was shocked.
Oh yeah, I mean the offensive MVP of the year coming into the Super Bowl, Peyton Manning trying to seal his legacy essentially. I mean, it's all set up as a Cinderella story, and yet he is just completely obliterated by the Seattle Hawks defense. I was completely blown away. I think as well as the rest of the nation. Now Peyton Manning didn't necessarily have a terrible statistical game. 280 yards and one touchdown. And keep in mind that Demaryius Thomas had the Super Bowl record for receptions in a game. But, when it came down to it, he didn't make the plays that counted, and he made those two terrible, terrible throws. They were ducks.
For the interceptions, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the second one wasn't necessarily – he couldn't really do anything about it. The pocket was collapsing, and he got his arm batted. And that,
yeah.
But the first throw was just god awful. I couldn't believe that I was seeing Peyton Manning throwing an absolute duck into the sky for Malcolm Smith to intercept. I mean, it was ridiculous.
And for all the talk about the Legion of Boom and the Seattle defense, I think this performance was as much as it was Peyton Manning struggling, it was him struggling because the Seattle defense really had their finest hour. We wondered
Absolutely.
All week whether the Denver receivers were going to be able to get off the line and make plays, and there were really two thought processes coming in. It was either all the weapons with Welker and Demaryius Thomas and all of these guys, they'd be able to stretch the Seattle secondary, make them adapt, and Peyton Manning would have a great game and Denver would win. What really happened was that none of the receivers could even get off the line of scrimmage. No one was open. They were blitzing Peyton Manning into oblivion, forcing him to make terrible throws. They didn't really, sack him, but he was under siege for the entire game. And it was just an absolutely performance. And you want to talk about, the old phrase, defense wins championships. We saw that clearly last night.
No, and remember, Knowshon Moreno and Monty Ball were absolute non-factors. Monty Ball had 6 carries, the most carries out of any Denver running back, and he had 1 yard. Knowshon Moreno had 5 carries for 17 yards. And so it's not just the secondary of Seattle that was locking down Peyton Manning. It was also their entire defensive front. This Seattle defense of 2013-2014 could be one of the best defenses we have ever seen in the NFL. That is no joke. To be able to stop an offense like Denver with the weapons that they have, like they did, it just proves the point that Seattle is the best team in the NFL, and this is one of the best defenses we will ever see. Every single play, you expected the defenders to compete, and, you know, they weren't causing any separation between the receivers. Peyton Manning had no one to throw to. It was incredible. I mean, it was really ridiculous.
As a secondary, I think after that performance and the year that the Legion of Boom has had, Sherman, Chancellor, these guys, you know, it's kind of lofty to just throw out these, you know, phrases, the best of all time, blah, 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 based on one game. But you look back at the year that that defense has had, they've got to be up there with, I think, that giant defense from a couple years ago when they beat New England and New England was undefeated, when they had Strahan, Umanyora, just an unbelievable defensive line, and that's how they were able to upset New England. But other than that, and you can go way back to, you know, Lawrence Taylor and Parcells if you want to really find another comparison, but this D, at this point, has got to be considered one of the best of all time.
So, yeah, no, definitely. And it's not just based off of one game. Keep that in mind. This team has been a competitor the entire season. One thing that you don't see in sports now is how good teams on the West Coast are. I'm going to bring this up because I've grown up on the West Coast my entire life. Teams on the West Coast, because of the media focus that is central in the New York area and the Northeast in general, we get overshadowed a lot over here, and it is something that you see in all sports, and that is definitely something that we saw throughout the entire season. I think everyone knew Seattle was good, but I don't think the entire country knew they were as good as they were just because they are in the Pacific Northwest and don't get as much media attention.
You're listening to the Russell Zimon Show. I'm Russell Zimon. You can follow me on Twitter at RussellZimonNYK. We're going to have close family member, might as well call my brother Chandler Zimon, who had the incredible opportunity of attending the Super Bowl, calling in a couple of moments to talk about that experience. And Rudge, this was something that we're really not accustomed to. I was talking to my dad, and he kind of went on about how this Super Bowl really felt like a Super Bowl that could have been played in 1985, or in a decade where you had Joe Montana just killing teams, and in Super Bowls where
the
people were really accustomed to having these blowout games, when for our generation, really, and in the last 14, 15 years, really beginning with the, you know, the St. Louis victory over Tennessee, where Dyson was tackled at the 1 yard line, and then immediately after that when Adam Vinatieri and the New England Patriots beat St. Louis in that Super Bowl. These games have been so close, and every game really has almost gone down to the wire. We even saw it last year with an incredible comeback from San Francisco, and this year was just totally different and a real departure from the parity and the close battles that we've become accustomed to, and it was just a very different Super Bowl than what we've really grown to expect, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You never see a blowout game in the NFL anymore. Like they say, any given Sunday, anything can happen. That's why you can never count out, you know, teams like the Cleveland Browns on a regular season Sunday, because they can always pull off an upset. Every team is capable of competing with their opponent, and especially in the Super Bowl when you get the two best teams in the league, that you don't expect a 43-8 turnout. I mean, you expect a hard-fought, grind-out, down-to-the-last-second type of game. And, you know, I think that's kind of what we've been accustomed to. But in a way, I think this is good for the NFL in general and for us as fans to realize
that.
Because to realize that the best team in the league is by far the best team in the league this year. Do you know what I'm saying? Because
that's
in years past, in years past, you can argue that, you know, let's take last year's Super Bowl, for example, the Ravens versus the Niners. That was an extremely tightly competitive game. And in a way, when you came out of it, you knew that the Ravens obviously were Super Bowl champions, but you knew that they only won by a little bit and had a couple things swayed differently. The Niners could have been the best team in the league.
It could have gone another way.
Exactly.
And
this year,
that's what I like about this year. Everyone knows Seattle, they are the best team in the NFL. And it really felt as though the NFC Championship game, looking back on it, might as well have been the Super Bowl, because clearly the two best teams in the NFL, I think, at this point are San Fran and Seattle.
No, definitely. Yeah. I was saying that to my friends after the game, is that we clearly saw from this game that the two best teams in the NFL are San Francisco and Seattle, hands down. I mean, for San Francisco to compete with Seattle the way they did last 2 weeks ago, and for the Broncos to come in and not even be able to compete against Seattle, it clearly showed that the two best teams in the league are San Francisco and Seattle. And I think that, to be honest, I think that was a good thing for the league.
And we will continue to talk about Seattle going forward. What will it mean for them, this win? Can they go forward, really build a dynasty under Pete Carroll? We'll be talking about the commercials, the halftime show, all that coming up. But right now we are going to take a caller who had the luxury of going to the Super Bowl last night. She's going to tell us a little bit about that experience. When we return from this quick music break, you're listening to the Russell and Rudd Show. We will be right back. And welcome back to the Russell Simon Road Show. I'm Russell Simon. You can follow me on Twitter at Russell Simon NYK. And we've got a very special guest, a close friend of the program. We go way back, and this kid had the honor of attending the Super Bowl. And not only that, Rudge, but he also gets a snow day the day after the Super Bowl. Living the dream right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Chandler Simon, he joins us now. Chan, how are you?
I'm great. Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Enjoying the snow day. It's almost like the cherry on top of the greatest ice cream sundae that you will ever have at this point. Go to the Super Bowl, and then, well, I get to wake up very early, go to my Spanish class, Rudge. I know we have class all day pretty much, but in the Northeast, they're buried under a bunch of snow. Chan, you're definitely doing it right.
Yeah, I know. I'm really lucky. I mean, I couldn't really ask for a better 2 days attending the Super Bowl and then having a snow day. I did have to shovel pretty early. After my mom was nice enough to do the first two snow days, but, yeah, it's real nice having a day off after a Super Bowl.
I think you owe her after being able to attend the Super Bowl yesterday. And I wanted to talk to you about that now, Chan. You live, obviously, in North Jersey, and when I originally heard that the Super Bowl was going to be played at MetLife Stadium in the cold, I was honestly a little bit skeptical. They were building MetLife Stadium. I thought it was kind of a ploy to get people more interested in the stadium, raise awareness and support for it, because at the time, the public perception about the new stadium was pretty mixed. People were not really advocating for it. People certainly liked the old Giant Stadium just fine. But I think overall, the NFL got extremely lucky. There were, you know, no blizzards, no bad weather. And I think the Super Bowl, from an outsider's perspective, definitely went swimmingly for the NFL. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just from the, you know, the moment we drove into the parking lot, I mean, it just looked, it was the NFL, clearly they took their time, and it really looked like, you know, it was an unbelievable job that they did to get this stadium ready for the Super Bowl. I mean, you know, I attend all eight of the Jet home games, as having season tickets, and, I mean, it just looked completely different from any Jet home game. You know, it almost looked like a different stadium. I mean, all the security was just, it was perfect. We went, it was really quick to get by. And then once we were in the stadium, there were all these different pavilions you could go in. You know, you could even see the Lombardi Trophy. And you could stand outside all the live NFL talk shows, you know, from NFL Network to ESPN. And then once you got in the stadium, I mean, everything was just decorated from Broncos stuff to Seahawks, you know, gear, and all the fans, they just seemed excited to be there. And then, I mean, come game time, it was like, I mean, it was an experience that I'll never forget. I mean, the crowd was, it was so loud, and you know, just words can't describe how incredible, you know, going to the first Super Bowl is.
Well, we're going to get you to try and describe them using words. We're talking with Chandler Simon, who attended Super Bowl I of the lucky 82,000 and around 700 that were able to attend the first cold weather Super Bowl. And Chandler, it really wasn't even that cold. At starting at kickoff, I believe the temperature was something around 49 degrees. Now, obviously, the NFL got lucky by a day, but the weather totally did not play a factor at all throughout Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, the weather couldn't have been nicer. I mean, it was a high of 49. It was 49 degrees at kickoff. It was actually the third coldest Super Bowl in history. It wasn't even the coldest, let alone the second coldest in history. And, I mean, people were, you know, in each seat, they would give you these seating pads that would have gloves, they would have hats, they would have hand warmers. I mean, they gave you everything to be ready as if the temperature was, you know, going to be 10 degrees or 20 degrees. And all I had to wear was my New York Jets sweatshirt, and that was about it. And I was pretty comfortable the entire game.
Rudge, you got it.
I was just going to say, I know people like me would have had to bundle up way more than a sweatshirt for that. I'm not used to that kind of weather. But, Chandler, I had a quick question for you. I was curious to see how the 12th man showed at this game. Were they a factor?
Oh, yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, that was something I was definitely curious about going into the game. And, I mean, as we're walking up to the stadium, it definitely looked like, you know, it was about even based on the you know, amount of Broncos fans and amount of Seahawks fans. But, I mean, this is probably given how the game was so lopsided. But, I mean, the Seahawks fans were just unbelievable. I mean, in the section that I was sitting, I would say it was about 80% Seahawks fans, and they were so loud. I mean, it was one of the loudest, probably the loudest football game I'd ever been to. And,
wow.
You know, that's saying with almost, you know, 40% of the fans being diehard Broncos fans who didn't really, like, talk that much or cheer that much because their team was getting blown out. But, you know, the
right.
Seahawks fans, they are loud, and, you know, they are really passionate fans. And it really showed that they, you know, they were excited for their team's first Super Bowl. And I wanted
to talk a little bit about that first play specifically. Peyton Manning goes to the line, the first play of the game. Everyone, I imagine, is going crazy. And then they muff the snap, and it ends up in the end zone for a safety. No, Sean Moreno had to dive on it. And after the game, Peyton Manning said in the post-game press conference that the noise played a giant factor, that they could not hear. It was a total miscommunication, and no one really knew what was going on because they tried to change the play, but they couldn't hear. You were in the building that play. While it was going on, was your reaction, wow, this was unbelievably loud? Was the crowd noise really that big of a factor for that specific play?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for the first snap of the game, I mean, I think we were honestly as surprised as Peyton was. I mean, it was, like, the first snap, it was incredibly loud. I mean, everyone was on their feet. Everyone was cheering. But, honestly, the biggest part of that was I think Peyton possibly was coming into this game thinking, you know, 50% of the fans are really going to be quiet while we're on offense. And he didn't really expect the crowd to be just incredibly loud. And, you know, it was just a huge miscommunication in the first play. And he was going up to call to change the play. And the center thinks he wants the ball and just snaps it right over his head. And I think the first play had everything to do with the Seahawks fans being loud as possible, and Peyton just being surprised that, you know, that these fans are actually just incredibly loud, and, you know, he really didn't know what to do in the first play.
And you also were in attendance for the halftime show as well. You get the concert with the price of your Super Bowl ticket. Bruno Mars, definitely not Beyonce, definitely not Bruce Springsteen, and some of the acts that they've had in the past. And we got the full experience of that watching the game on TV, but what was it like to be in the stadium for the halftime show? They had the fireworks, they had the light show. It looked very cool.
Yeah, I mean, being in the stadium for the halftime show, I mean, that was pretty amazing. I mean, if you're just talking about, you know, I would say the coolest part of the entire halftime show was just, like, the light show and, you know, how they put on with the, you know, they gave each of us these wool hats that had LED lights that were controlled by people in the stadium, and they basically had, like, PS system in the hats, and they would place them in different sections, and they would press these buttons to, you know, basically set off the lights for different sections and create, like,
That's really cool.
Amazing light show. And, I mean, that was honestly the part that I most remember about the halftime show. You know, other than the singing, I mean, he was a great performer, but it was just incredible how each section was in different lights, and they would count down. They would let the countdown from 10 to 0 to start the concert was using all the hats, and they just coordinated amazing. And then with the fireworks going on, it was really just an incredible display of a light show during the halftime.
Just one more question about the halftime show in particular. I've always been curious as to know how audible are the performers while you're in the stadium? Because obviously on our TV, it's picture-perfect sound, but you know that going to concerts, you never really hear the full experience. And with a full stadium of 86,000 people, how well were you able to actually hear the performers?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. That was one thing that my dad and I, we both kind of looked at each other and, you know, we thought that the sound, it definitely was not as good as the sound on the TV, you know, with the sound system that people have nowadays. But yeah, like it was definitely different. The sound was a little muffled for the singers, and you know, just the stadium rocking and everyone in their seats and they're screaming and they're excited. You know, you definitely cannot hear it as well as if you were watching it at home.
Now, going back to the game, Chandler, you were not treated to one of the all-time great games that people will talk about forever. This was really the first game that I can even remember, because the last real blowout in the Super Bowl came during San Diego when they hosted it, when the Buccaneers absolutely obliterated the Oakland Raiders
and
John Gruden coached them. And this was a game that was pretty much over at halftime. And even before Percy Harvin took back the second half kickoff for a touchdown, you already knew that it was going to take a miracle comeback for Denver to win. How apparent was that while you were there? Was the mood of the people, just everyone kind of knew pretty early on that it was just going to be Seattle's day? Or, you know, what was their hope for Denver's side? Or they pretty much gave up just like the team did?
I mean, there was some hope. I mean, based on the section that I was in, that there was just a majority of Seahawks fans, it definitely felt, you know, they were, you know, I had to stand up the entire game because the first two rows in front of us, they didn't sit down once. And, you know, they were just all Seattle fans. They were extremely excited. But I would say, you know, right after Manning threw that crucial pick six, you know, this was basically at the start of the second quarter, they constructed their first real drive. They got their first couple first downs, and this was towards the end of the first half. And, you know, they were about at the 30-yard. They were about a 30-yard line of Seattle, and they had a fourth down, and they really could have kicked the field goal. And where I thought they should have kicked that field goal just to get on the board. And, you know, I thought if they got on the board in the first half, they would have had a shot maybe to come back. The defense could have stepped up, and Manning could have thrown a couple touchdown passes in the second quarter. But when they went for it on fourth down and the pass got tipped and they didn't go for it and it ended up being 22-0 at half, basically most of the fans, even the Denver fans who I was talking to, who I was sitting next to, they thought that, you know, they had to at least get 3 or 7 points at the end of the first half for it to for them to possibly come back, and they really lost hope right at about halftime.
Okay, just one final question. I'm just curious to see, when did most Denver fans start leaving this game?
Yeah, I would say the first batch of Denver fans started leaving after when Denver scored to make it 36-8, and then they kicked the onside kick, and Seattle just easily recovered it, and then they started to drive. They had, like, a big run. You know, then Denver fans thought, you know, it was basically over. And, you know, if they were thinking of themselves, if they could recover this onside kick, you know, they were only down 28 points. You know, maybe they could get a couple touchdowns and the miracle would, you know, would happen. But once the Seattle recovered the onside kick, then I started seeing Denver fans pack up their bags and get out. And then, you know, when it was 43, when it became like 43-8, then it was basically just 100% Seattle fans in the crowd, and they were going crazy.
His name is Chandler Simon. You can follow him on Twitter at CSimon312, at CSimon312. He is my brother. We keep it in the family. Chandler, glad you had an unbelievable time. I'm sure I'll talk to you later. Thank you very much for calling in. And, hey, enjoy the snow day. That is something that we certainly do not get here in Los Angeles, and I don't think I'm going to be able to get another snow day until next year. I won't be home for quite a while, so definitely enjoy it. Don't throw snowballs at cars.
Of course not. Thank you very much, you guys, for having me on. It was a real pleasure to tell you guys about the experience of the Super Bowl.
You got it, Chan. Enjoy the snow day, and I will certainly talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, man. See ya.
And that was Chandler Simon. Once again, you can follow him on Twitter at CSimon312. He was at the Super Bowl, and there you have it. Seems like something that you've got to experience at least once. Right, Rudge? I mean, you know, just hearing what my dad and brother were saying about this game and how incredible an experience it was to attend, I was originally of the belief that, you know, you got to wait till the perfect time. I got to wait for the Jets to get in one for me to really justify going to such an incredible and incredibly expensive event. But I'm starting to kind of change, especially because it looks as though the Jets will never make it to the Super Bowl. And if I want to go, I'm just going to have to go to one at this point.
No, I think you might have to be waiting a while for your Jets. But I do think that patience could be a virtue when it comes to watching your own team play in the Super Bowl. Did you hear about
that?
That's
like a one-shot deal. You know, you're not going to, like, multiple. Like, if you make it, like, that's it. You're going once.
Exactly. No, did you hear about that Cleveland Browns fan who was offered tickets by Joe Hayden to the Super Bowl, and he said he's not going until the Browns go?
Yeah.
Did you hear about that? I had so much respect for that guy.
Yeah.
As insane as he might be, to be honest, if you're a Cleveland Browns fan or a New York Jets fan or, for me, San Francisco 49ers fan, and you want to go watch the Seattle Seahawks and the Denver Broncos play in the Super Bowl, I mean, sure, it's an exciting experience, but it's not, you know, everything you want and more. I think having a very special experience is something worth saving for. But obviously there's timing issues, and you never know if you'll be able to afford it at the time. And but, I mean, definitely going to the Super Bowl is, hands down, it's an incredible experience, I bet.
You're listening to the Russell and Rudd Show. We will be right back after this quick music break. We will be talking Rudge. Seattle is very good, and they are very, very young. Could Seattle be a dynasty? We will also be talking about Peyton Manning and his legacy and what this win means for the NFL going forward. You're listening to the Russell and Rudd Show. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Russell and Rush Show. Russell Simon here. You can follow me on Twitter at RussellSimonNYK, and you can also follow Jacob Rudger. Rudge, what's your handle again?
At JacobRudger24.
Boom, there you have it. 10:35 here on the West Coast, 1:35 in the East, and thank you to all of those of you who are on the East Coast who are snowed in and watching us and listening to us. Now bringing you another episode of Russell and Rudge. We are about to wind down our first month of coverage of the Russell and Rudge Show. And Rudge, we are almost at 800 total listeners for our five shows. So we are certainly growing, and it's great to have the audience, and definitely something that we love to do and love to keep bringing you. And we've gotten some great guests, and really looking forward to where this show will go from here.
Seriously, time has been flying. I can't believe it's almost been a month, and I can't believe we already have that many listeners. Thank you so much for all the listeners out there. We love you. We appreciate you. Keep tuning in. We promise some great radio coming up in the future.
I think we gotta have like a 12th man pun going on with our listeners somehow. I don't know
if we should get that cocky yet.
I don't think we're at
maybe
that
when
level.
We get
we're
up
no
to like
Legion.
Thousands.
We're no Legion of Boom yet. And speaking of the Legion of Boom and Seattle, this is a team that has now won their first Super Bowl in franchise history with a 43-8 thrashing of the Denver Broncos at MetLife Stadium yesterday. And going forward, right, and I want to touch on this now because I think it's very important. Very hard to be a dynasty in football. Very hard to win back-to-back championships. Very hard to get back to the level of playing Super Bowl caliber football, and that's why teams don't really ever repeat. The last team to do it was the New England Patriots way back when in the middle 2000s. But, Rudge, I look at this Seattle team with a dominant defense, with a totally young team. You've got a second-year quarterback in Russell Wilson. You've got a young and all-pro secondary. You've got a great coach in Pete Carroll. You've got draft picks. And I look at a team, Rudge, that is going to be extremely good for a long time.
No, this is certainly not their – I mean, this is their best year yet. But this team has all the tools to become better in the future. And, you know, what was unique about this team is if this is the start of a legacy, if it is, which is a lot to say and a lot to accomplish – then we can officially say that the Seattle Seahawks started their legacy by determining that they are the absolute best team in football. And that's why I think this large margin of victory was such a huge deal. It's because if the Seattle Seahawks can establish a legacy at this point, I mean, at this point they've already determined that they are by far the best team in the NFL. No one's close. But
and they got the ring.
They can continue. Exactly. Now they have the ring to prove it. Now when I argue with my fellow Seahawks friends, I can't say that you have no championships because that's something that Niners and Seahawks fans always like to joke about. No, this team is set up for the future. I think the only thing they really need to improve on is their offensive line. They had a lot of struggles with their offensive line this season, with players being injured throughout the entire year, players making constant penalty mistakes. But that's, once again, this team is young. And this team is fresh, and they are not stopping anytime soon. So expect them to compete later on in the future.
And I think John Schneider, their GM, and Pete Carroll, the former Trojan, have really established a formula for long-term success with this team, okay? Keep in mind, this is not a team that rebuilt with a number one draft pick, okay? You can't go back 5 years to the, you know, 2009 draft and say when they got the number one pick after they were 2-14, that's when it all changed for them. It all changed for them when they drafted Russell Wilson in the third round of the NFL draft, okay? Keep in mind, he went in the same draft as Andrew Luck, RG3. And of all those guys, these high-profile guys, Ryan Tannehill is another one. Wilson is the first one to win a Super Bowl. And Seattle has thrived on finding the diamond in the rough and the players who come in the fifth round. Richard Sherman was a late-round draft pick. Chancellor was a late-round pick. And they talked about it ad nauseum last night in the post-game press conferences, how no one really believed in them. This was a team that was not constructed of highly touted rookies. These are diamond in the roughs, and it shows
and
that the scout balance, that's how you win.
Even you can't forget to mention Marshawn Lynch, who was, you know, struggling to save his career in Buffalo.
And
at a point where
he really
was
struggled in Buffalo.
Yeah, he was not the best. You know, he came out of college and everyone kind of expected big things out of Marshawn Lynch. He had a great career at Cal, next to Aaron Rodgers, but he came into Buffalo and he made an immediate impact his rookie season. I think he was close to winning Rookie of the Year. If he did, I'm not sure if he did, but he slowed down in 2009. He only scored 2 touchdowns, and at the point where Seattle picked him up in 2010. He was struggling a lot. He only had 573 yards. And, you know, it goes to show that this team is quite a uniquely built team.
And for all the talk about how the NFL is totally a passing league and you need Peyton Manning or Tom Brady to win, think about the last 2 Super Bowl champions, Denver and Seattle. Both of them had certainly good quarterback play and quarterbacks who made plays when they needed to, but they also had great running games with Marshawn Lynch and Ray Rice and incredible defenses. The Raven D, when they had Ray Lewis and all these guys stepped up big last year, and this year you're talking about one of the best defenses of all time, and isn't that the winning formula? It goes to show that you really need balance, and you need a D, you need a running back, you need a total team to really make it that far and win the Lombardi.
No, absolutely. I think every team you look at has had a real complete team, despite looking at, you know, the teams like the Patriots, where it was pretty much all Tom Brady back then. But I look at a guy like Aaron Rodgers, and I see Aaron Rodgers has the potential to be one of, if not the best quarterback in the NFL. And he could be better than Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, but you see that he does not have the team built around him. So it's not all about the quarterback, certainly not. And I think the best part about this Seahawks team was actually stressing how important defense is. Do you agree with me? I think that we get away from the good defenses in football, and I think the best defenses in football are the teams that, you know, create the most excitement in games, and I don't know. Do you agree with me there?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Seattle has the tools in place for long-term success because you know that this is a team that's going to draft well. You know they're going to find the 5th-round guys who are going to be major contributors. And I think when you consider that how many juniors are coming out now and the influx of players who it's kind of hard to evaluate how well they're going to do because they haven't played college football for that long. It's harder to tell. Some really slip through the cracks. And Pete Carroll has just been there to pick these guys up and make them Super Bowl champions.
Well, and remember that the most attractive free agent destination is Seattle at this point, hands down. Everyone who's becoming a free agent
Why
this offseason wants
to.
You want to play for Pete Carroll. You want to play for the best team in football. I mean, if you're
you
a player.
You want to play in front of those fans.
You want to play in front of those fans. You want to play with that team chemistry that they have. It's really something special, to be honest. And it all starts with Pete Carroll. It all starts with Pete Carroll. Hands down, Pete Carroll is establishing himself as one of the best coaches in NFL history. He's not going away anytime soon. He's so unique. The relationships he develops with players, we saw it starting from USC, where all the players just loved him because he loved them. He personally invested time into getting to know his players. And I think in an industry like the NFL, you can have head honchos up there who command the ship without really
That's
any personal
horrible.
Interaction with their players.
Rebellious.
Yeah. No, Harbaugh is not like that at all, actually. Harbaugh is a very personal
okay.
coach. He definitely is. He's definitely a very confrontational, personal. He's similar to Pete Carroll in a lot of ways. And I think even Bill Belichick is in a little bit of a way personal. Actually, Bill Belichick, honestly, is the epitome of non-personal head coaching. He kind of just sits there at the helm, and I don't know enough about it to argue that. But
yeah,
what I
and
do
and
know.
There are different ways to do it, but I think Pete Carroll, and even, you know, I'm a Jet fan, and I can have delusions of Rex Ryan being included in that group and, you know, not a Super Bowl-winning coach, but of a guy who loves his players, and this is kind of the new way of coaching, and we see it a lot now in the NFL, where you're not getting the Vince Lombardi, I want you to, you know, play with your, you know, injuries or whatever, you know, you're running through the mud, it's miserable. No, it's the new age of coaching is where a guy like Rex Ryan or Pete Carroll can succeed because you have the players who look forward to playing. And keep in mind, this is not peewee football anymore. You're talking about millionaire young men who are obviously not going to be bullied around by some lunatic coach, which is what we saw in Tampa Bay for much of the season there, where they kind of revolted on Greg Schiano. And Pete Carroll and Rex Ryan, I think, coach certainly, you know, in a smart way. They draft well, but they create an environment where it's fun to be in that locker room, fun to be playing on that team, and I think that is part of why they were able to win all of these games and ultimately win the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. I think in the game of football especially, this is becoming a consistent trend, is that GMs and team owners want their players to love their coach, and they want a coach who's going to invest time in not only winning, but investing time in getting to know the players and getting them connected on a personal level. I mean, you look just in the sport of football in general, not specifically within the NFL, but at how USC completely revamped after getting Ed Orgeron as their coach.
Yeah.
Because they loved him so much and fired, you know, he let them have dessert. He fired them up. He talked to them personally. He asked them about, you know, their week, their studies. It's just a much more comfortable environment for football football players to play under, because, honestly, they're under a huge microscope, under a lot of pressure all the time, and to have someone who can relieve that and level with you on that situation, on that scenario, is something that is crucial for NFL teams in the future.
10:48 in Los Angeles, 1:48 on the Snowden East Coast. You're listening to another episode of Russell and Rudge. I'm Russell Simon. Follow me on Twitter at Russell Simon NYK. We've got 11 minutes left in our program for today. I think, Rudge, you have to head out a little early to go to class, right?
I have to head out to class in about 2 minutes. So let's wrap up some final thoughts for me,
perfect,
at least, and then you can wrap up the show.
And it goes to show, people, that we may be devoted to our show, but the studies do come first. Mom, I hope you're listening. They definitely do come first. Rudd, final take from the Super Bowl, a blowout. I want to hear your thoughts.
My final take from the Super Bowl is that this established that the Seattle Seahawks are the best team in football, and that any team who can compete with them next season has the right to say that they are competing to be even better, which is something so exciting.
You're setting the stage for the Niners to win, and then it'll allow you to talk, even though they're not. Give the 12th man their credit. Seattle was the best team in the league by a huge margin. They made the plays to win the Super Bowl. Give them credit. Come on, Rudge.
Obviously, I'm so excited for football in the future now that Seattle, there's no arguing that they are the best team. I am still a little bitter about my Niners, obviously, but no, this Seattle Seahawks team is something special. I will not deny it, and they will be special for years to come. And so that's why I say that this is exciting, because now that we know how special this team is and how good they really are, if anyone can really compete with them next year, I don't mean just the Niners, I mean anybody. If anybody can compete, this includes the Cardinals in the NFC West, who beat Seattle at home and who had a legitimate shot at the playoffs. But this includes every team in football. If you can beat the Seattle Seahawks at this point, you have a chance to become the best team in football. So I think that's exciting.
Final thought, Rudge, at least from my end, real quick before you go, we got to talk about Peyton Manning. A guy who finishes his career year one game short. He was dumbfounded for pretty much the entire game. And what does this mean going forward for Manning? He finished 34-49 on the day, 280 yards, one touchdown and two interceptions, one of which was returned for a touchdown. He allowed more points ultimately than he was able to score for Denver. And I really think this was his final shot. I don't foresee Peyton Manning ever getting this far again. Maybe one more year or two. I think him and Brady might retire together in 2 years, but I think this was definitely his final shot at winning a second Lombardi trophy.
I think Peyton Manning will come back next year, and he will retire because of his age and his neck injuries, his continuous neck problems.
Yeah.
But I don't see another opportunity for Manning in the future. Obviously, there's opportunity there, but I think this was his legitimate last shot. And at least we know now that his legacy is still preserved. Don't discredit his entire season, which proved that he's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game of football. Just because he doesn't have a second ring does not make him any less good. Do you know what I mean?
So the final thought, where do you rank them? I think you got to go. I think Brady 1, Montana 2, Peyton 3.
I think Joe Montana is still the best quarterback of all time. I think that can be disputed, but I don't think that Tom Brady has done enough to surpass Joe Montana yet. But I think it goes Montana, Brady, Manning, and then maybe Elway.
Marino, United, as well. Elway, all these guys. Great, Rhodes. Well, great to have you back. But it is, you know, definitely a tragic day because we have to wait another 7 months for the beginning of football season. Only the middle of February. That means it is now firmly NBA time, and we will have a lot of basketball talk beginning next week when Russell and Rudge returns. For now, that is all the time we have for this week's edition.
And
we might be coming back to you later in the week. We will figure that out when it comes around. Rudge, final thoughts.
Yeah, look forward to some NBA talk, some college basketball talk. Huge change in the college basketball rankings this weekend. That was extremely exciting. And then the MLB season is starting very soon. Get pumped for that.
Spring training, baby.
So definitely a lot of great sports to be discussed ahead with me and Russell Simon.
It never ends.
Keep listening in. It never ends. But I gotta go to class. I might be late.
You got it wrong. That's all the time we have for today's episode. Everybody, I'm Russell Simon. You can follow me on Twitter at Russell Simon NYK. You've been listening to the Russell and Rudge Show, Blog Talk Radio, Neon Tommy Podcast. We'll be back later in the week. Thanks for listening.